This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Yeah, buddy, August the 17th, be with you on a Monday night. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and I'll be with you all night long from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Broadcasting, as always, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. I've got a pseudo fat Matt Brown thing going on with my hair. Kind of look like a German cartoon from the late 1990s, but we will push on. We will persevere. We'll have some fun tonight. I want to get weird with the college football playoff odds. The AP Top 25 is out. I'll explain what they got wrong, what they got right, and a team that I think is a long shot that we should be making a bigger deal about to make the college football playoff. Also have to examine the numbers for recent NFL MVPs. I looked back on some of these situations and what names make sense based on the recent history in that award. Also, we have news involving the Offensive Rookie of the Year market, injuries to a couple of key players. Find out how that impacts who we should be looking at for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Plus, Ryan Day, he's flat out admitting he's scared, and the season hasn't even started. All of that and more coming your way, plus a dilemma for the sports books as far as the Los Angeles Dodgers are concerned as we push towards the playoffs in baseball. And baseball is where we're going to begin. We have three live games. Brutal scheduling day. Rob Manfred doesn't want us to have content. Rob Manfred doesn't want us to have live sweats. Rob Manfred hates cashing out, hates this show, because if he liked us, he'd give us a little bit of juice here. How is it a Monday night? We don't have late night baseball starting about an hour ago that we can live on together for the next few hours. Either way, we do have drama in Chicago, where right now the White Sox lead in the ninth inning at Wrigley Field 5-4. Current number, Chicago, the White Sox, I should point out, -710. The Cubbies, +538, 9.5 the total. Heavy juice on the under at -529. Just as we were hitting the air, I believe it was Michael Bush got into one. However, warning track power. It remains a one-run game, one out in the ninth. Alex Bregman is up facing Jordan Hicks, and he just fouled one away at 99 miles an hour. This is a tough one for me. I got to tell you, I had the right read, wrong bet, right? What is it? Right church, wrong pew? That's been me with baseball lately. I had the White Sox first five +130 instead of going all, full game at plus like 140, 143-ish because I didn't trust their bullpen. Well, in the bottom of the fifth inning, the White Sox kicked the ball around with two outs, led to the eventual tying and go-ahead run, and the Cubbies took the lead there at the end of the fifth. Then the White Sox came back, and they took the lead back. Andrew Benintendi, his 13th home run of the season, and that's how we ended up 5-4 here in the ninth. Total in this game closed at 8, so we've already gone over there. Chicago, I keep saying Chicago. The White Sox closed +139. The Cubbies closed -150. And now it looks like Alex Bregman with a one-out walk represents that tying run. So some slight movement here as far as the total is concerned. The under now juiced at -298. What did I say before about -530? Right now the Cubbies +319. The White Sox -387. As Liam Hicks comes to the plate, and he represents the go-ahead run. I'm sorry, Liam Hicks. Ian Happ. I saw Hicks up top, and I saw a lefty bat up. It is Jordan Hicks. Liam Hicks plays for the Rays now, previously of the Marlins. See, I know things. I'm not just an idiot. Unfortunately, I Ron Burgundy that and saw the name Hicks and thought Liam. Ian Happ up. He's 1-for-3 on the night. 1-0 the count now. He just saw a ball. Looked like a breaking pitch off the hands of Hicks, which is... That surprises me, I guess, trying to induce a ground ball early in the count, but Jordan Hicks pumps it 99, 101, like just reach back and let it rip, and there's 99, he blows it by him, and that's the first strike. And I believe he got him to chase that out of the zone. I don't think that was going to be a strike. If I'm Jordan Hicks, man, go down with your best stuff. Make him beat you with that cheddar, man. Give him that Limburger up top. Come on. And there was a pickoff attempt at first of the pinch runner. Looks like Tyrone Taylor into pinch run for Alex Bregman. So if a ball gets in the gap, first to third, very likely, even scoring from first, not out of the question with Tyrone Taylor. He's not like super fast, but he's above average speed here. As Liam Hicks, looks like that was a changeup and it faded away. He swung and missed. Ian Happ. I'm going to keep doing it. Ian Happ swings and misses at strike number two. And now Jordan Hicks goes up top 100 miles an hour and misses. We've got an even count, 2-2. Market movement here. We are looking at the White Sox minus 384, plus 317 on the Cubbies, total 9.5. The under juiced at minus $3-ish, plus 214 on the over. Like, if you like the Cubs, I'd rather just take the over here in case they tie it up and it goes to extras. And that is a miss inside. Jordan Hicks in a bit of trouble here with a full count. Ian Happ can sit dead red. That is crucial here, is that Ian Happ can just sit on a fastball because really Hicks hasn't located the breaking ball. The pitches that Happ swung at out of the zone ended up being strikes because he swung at them, not because they were in the strike zone. And that is ball four, and good God, that is right on the edge. There's not going to be a review here, but man, did Jordan Hicks just miss it off the knee. I need to see the replay here. Oh, God, that's about as close to being a low and in strike as it could possibly be to be called a ball. There's a world where that could be called a strike and then reviewed later. They're not reviewing, so it must be further out of the zone than I think, but man, that was very close. A mound visit now with two runners on. The go-ahead run for the Cubs is at first base, and the market has moved once again. White Sox now down to minus 216. The Cubs are plus 186. 9.5 is the total. See, if I was doing anything here, I would consider the over 9.5 versus the plus 186 on the Cubs, because we're at 9. One run sends you to extras. You need two runs for a Cubs win. You're also going to have extras in the mix. I'm not touching this game. I was dead wrong about this one. I had the White Sox in the first 5. They have a chance to win it in 9, but the reality is they could blow it in the next couple pitches here. As we go back, and Jordan Hicks working on the bump right now, having to face, looks like, Nico Horner at the dish. Horner doesn't have a ton of power, but you know what Horner has? He has speed and he has contact ability, and that can make for some chaotic things. And there is a ball up the middle, and that should tie it up as it's bobbled in center field. Nico Horner goes right up the gut, and we are all tied up at 5s. Wow. The Cubs with a nice little comeback to show some fight, man. You'll love to see that in the Chicago rivalry. It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're listening to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Plenty to come as far as football is concerned throughout the program. But right now, we're locked in on Major League Baseball. 3 live games. Aside from this one going on in the Windy City, we have the Twins up 4-2 in the 9th on the Braves. Atlanta does have the tying run at the plate right now with 1 out in the 9th in the name of Dominic Smith. And he has got a 1-1 count against him, it looks like. This last pitch was just called a ball. The Twins are challenging that it was actually a strike. Over in Colorado, it's a bit of a laugh for 8th inning. Dodgers up 11-2 on the Rockies. Shohei Ohtani with 2 home runs in this game. In fact, I believe he has 3 hits so far in the contest. Let me just pull that up here. He was hitting a double as we hit the air. No, he has 4 hits. I lied. 4 for 5, 4 runs, 3 ribbies, 2 homers. He was plus $1.90-ish to go deep tonight at Coors Field, and he did it 2 times. So he's like couscous. Home run so nice, he did it twice. As it looks like we've got a Colorado Rockies threat. Nope. Is it going to go? Nope. Warning track power at Coors Field, and that is, leave the second out. Yep, second out of the 8th inning. Back to Wrigley Field. That's where the drama is brewing, even though Twins up 4-2 on the Braves in the 9th at Target Field. Wrigley has the bases loaded. Miguel Amaya, the backup catcher, is pinch hitting right now. And if he puts one in play and it breaks through the infield, that will send this thing home. And Jordan Hicks misses inside with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Amaya, 0-for-3 lifetime against Jordan Hicks. Worth noting here, chance to be a hero as the infield's playing in to get that force at home or potentially turn a double play somewhere. And Hicks answers right back with a strike. Now the Cubs in a tie game are minus 558. They were not far off from that number when we hit the air 9 minutes ago on the plus side. Now they're laying it. White Sox plus 440. And Miguel Amaya goes fishing for one in the dirt and misses it. That is strike number 2. Jordan Hicks is ahead in this count 1-2 with 1 out. Double play ends this inning, sends us to extras. And a hit sends us home for the night at Wrigley Field. Miguel Amaya, though, on his heels right now with the advantage in Jordan Hicks' favor with a 1-2 count. What does he do here? He swings and misses at a yacker. That is the second out of the inning. The Cubs are now minus 297 in this 5-5 game. plus 250 with the White Sox. 11.5 is your total. The under's minus $2. I'm not going to touch that, but at 10, one more run wins it at 11. Extra innings can get weird. I'd avoid the total right now. Back to Target Field. There's two outs. Looks like Dom Smith got out. Drake Baldwin is now up. He's facing Gomez for the Minnesota Twins. Two outs, ninth. Runner on second. Baldwin is that tying run. 4-2 is the score. Twins minus 2,500. Braves are 13-1. 6.5. Your current in-game total. As Drake Baldwin for Atlanta, he looks at strike one, and Mike Yastrzemski, he takes third base, no contest there. So first base is open, and back to Wrigley, a ground ball to third. Vargas gets it on the backhand, wins the foot race to third. That off the bat of Carson Kelly, and that will end it in the 10th inning, or in the 9th inning. We will go to the 10th. Tied up at fives, Murakami, Vargas, Benintendi all do up in the top of the 10th inning for the Pale Hosers, as they are now plus 117. The Cubs are minus 134. 11.5 is the total. We are kind of where we started when this thing first got going. So a lot of drama going on at Wrigley Field. We love to see it because we're going to be all over it throughout the night here. We like the Cubs. The Cubs are a team we bet at the trade deadline 20-1 to win the World Series. The White Sox, though, despite some of their shortcomings, when you look at the roster, they're not scared of anybody. Are the Indianapolis Colts scared of their quarterback returning and their wide receivers dealing with injuries? Well, they made a move regarding that. Plus, we will look at more in the National Football League in the three-point stance, Offensive Rookie of the Year. Some news regarding that next.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you all night long from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Bottom of this hour, which is 15 minutes from right now. It's just a fancy way of saying 8:30 on the West Coast, 11:30 on the East Coast. Alex Rollins, NFL film analyst, will be on the show. I'll ask him plain and simple. Does Tua Tagovailoa have what it takes to really be the quarterback of an NFL team in the year of our Lord 2026? Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, the best there is when it comes to looking ahead to the season right now. Brett Ciancia does a fantastic job laying out some of the numbers for you. He will give us some of his favorite plays, and he and I are aligned on one team in the Big Ten to win the national championship. Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, prop points here on VSiN. He'll be with us in our second hour, about an hour and 15 minutes from now, looking at Major League Baseball, the dilemma for the sports books with the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. Sure, they're scuffling. Sure, they just lost the Brewers, but I'll remind you about some recent history that says don't be worried if you're a Dodgers backer. And I know you all hate the Dodgers, but the reality is the Dodgers feel like this is what they're going to do every single year. We'll talk to Jeff about that later on in the program. Marco D'Angelo, professional handicapper, will be with us in our final hour at 1 p.m. Eastern time with some football futures he's attacking right now. But we'll stay with the Major League Baseball because while we were away at break, the game went final at Target Field. Twins with the win, 4-2 over Atlanta. That was a game where Martin Perez was on the hill. I didn't know what to do. Twins cash plus 115 with Bailey Ober on the bump. Ober's better at home than he is on the road. Does pitch to contact. Doesn't go deep into games. But did just enough here. Not able to get through five. Twinkies get that dub, 4-2. They cash plus 115. We stay under the total of nine in that contest. Josh Bell drove in two runs for Minnesota there. Two live games currently going on. We are in the ninth inning in Colorado, and we will go to the bottom of the ninth inning. 11-2. Dodgers with the lead there. Back to Wrigley Field as we have a situation developing in extra innings. 5-5 is your score. Top of 10. There are two on and now one out as it looks like the Cubs elected to walk Murakami. Put runners on first and second, give themselves an option for a force out and a double play. And they just got Miguel Vargas out, I believe, swinging on strikes. That brings up Andrew Benintendi, who comes to the plate now. He is hitting in the cleanup spot, and he did homer earlier in this contest. However, he swings right through a low changeup, and he's very quickly down on the count 0-2. Tough, tough 10th inning, you think you have Murakami up, but the reality is they can take the bat out of his hands, and it looks like that's exactly what they did here. Three walks on the night for Munetaka Murakami here. Two runs scored, 0 for 2, but three walks. That on-base percentage through the roof at 371. And that is another changeup out of the zone, and Benintendi swings and misses it miserably. That is two outs in the 10th. Market adjustment has the Cubbies minus 279 up to minus 298 now. White Sox 2.5 to 1, 11.5 is the total. I mean, I'm never really going to say lay the minus 191, but the under's minus 191. That feels pretty good here because up in the lineup, it is Montgomery at the dish, and that is Braden Montgomery, not Colson Montgomery. He's 1-for-4, 238. He's got four homers on the year, but he is not a refined hitter. However, this is a good spot for him to come through for the Chicago White Sox, as he has that go-ahead run in scoring position at second, and he is down on the count right now while we were setting this up. 0-1, and now 0-2. Man, these are efficient at-bats here. I believe that's Jacob Webb on the hill. Yep, Jacob Webb in relief right now, 33-year-old right-hander with the Cubbies in 2026. He's got a 2.33 ERA. He's having a pretty solid year. 8 holds on the season, and 61 strikeouts in 54 innings. Didn't realize Jacob Webb was having that good of a year, but you know what? That is a strong showing thus far if he can get out of this and give the Cubs a chance to win it in the bottom of the 10th inning. 1-2, County goes upstairs with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball and misses by about 3 feet, but that's probably the right call there. Pressure spot, rookie hitter on the other side. See if he'll swing at one that he can't do anything with. So I like that. It's now a 2-2 count to Brennan Montgomery, and he looks at strike three. But according to the graphic, according to the strike zone on the screen, that thing's not a strike. And Montgomery isn't leaving the batter's box, so we've got a White Sox ABS challenge. I always say this. If that graphic's right, you have to preface it, because we don't know. We just assume that they get that right. I feel like it's not always right. But if it's right, and now we're seeing the replay with the ABS, it is out of the zone. That doesn't even touch the zone. So we're going to come back out here on a full count. Jacob Webb back on the hill, and we will see what happens with Brennan Montgomery at the plate in a tie game in the 10th inning. This is good pressure, man. This is what you like to see, especially as someone who dove in on the Cubs to win the World Series at the trade deadline. You know, you don't love having to be in extra innings, but you do like the fight. You like the perseverance. You like a team that doesn't give up when they're down, and they've been down a couple times in this game. So the Cubs started with a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the first, and then in the fourth inning, they allowed 3 runs. And then in the bottom of the fifth, they answered back with 2 more of their own. 8th inning, that's when the White Sox took the lead on the Benintendi 2-run shot. That made this one 5-4. Then bottom of the 9th, Cubbies answer right back. They tie it up. And that's how we are right now, 5-5 in the 10th inning with Jacob Webb on the hill. Are they taking him out of the game in the middle of an at-bat? Or what just happened? Did he get the out? What am I missing? Oh, base is loaded. Never mind. Okay now. Looks like he walked him. While I was going through the recap, looks like he walked Brennan Montgomery. This is tough because I was just praising Jacob Webb for having a pretty good year, but now it's 2/3 of an inning for him, and he's got 2 walks. One was an intentional walk to Murakami, though, but either way. And after Brennan Montgomery in the lineup, it looks like it's Tristan Peters who pinched hit for Brennan Doyle a couple innings ago. And Tristan Peters hitting 272 on the year, you know, limited action for him, center fielder. He did make an error in center field just now when Nico Horner hit the tying run home in the 9th inning. Didn't lead to a run, but it certainly didn't help the opportunity to throw a guy out at home trying to score from second. And Webb misses with a high breaking ball, and I think they're reviewing this one because that looked like it touched the zone. Now, there is always a chance when you factor in depth, always important to factor in depth, boys and girls, where that ball could have gone over the strike zone. But based on what I'm seeing on the graphic right now, that about 3/4 of the baseball is in the strike zone. With that, that call has been overturned. It's now an 0-1 count. That is a strike on Tristan Peters. Tristan Peters sounds like a left tackle you draft in your Madden franchise, like 4 seasons in out of like UAB. Either way, he's facing an 0-2 count right now as Webb with an off-speed pitch got him to chase. 0-2, 10th inning, 5-5 the score at Wrigley Field. And that is a ground ball foul off the bat of Peters, who it's not the worst thing in the world that down 0-2, you're just swinging for contact right now. It's probably the right approach with the bases loaded anyway with two out, because a sac fly doesn't do anyone any good. So just hit the ball hard somewhere. Just put the ball in play. You don't have to lift it. You don't have to do too much. If it breaks through the infield, you're potentially scoring one or two runs. As Peters grounds one to first, it's over the bag, and they do get him at first. That could have gotten dicey if it hit the bag there, but see, there we go. We're out of the inning. Jacob Webb works out of the trouble. That's my guy, Jacob Webb, reliever for the Chicago Cubs. Right now, the betting market has the Cubbies as we head to the bottom of the 10th inning. Minus 501. White Sox are plus 401. 11.5 is the total. See, this is the problem. Right now, the reason why I didn't bet the White Sox to win the game was because I didn't trust their bullpen. So in the same sense, could I go right now 4-1 on the White Sox as they're going deeper into their bullpen to go into extra innings? Can I really rationalize that bet right now? I probably shouldn't, but I do want to. Week zero of college football is almost here, and with the regular NFL season right behind it, now's the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. If you join today, you're going to get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides. With that, we've got team previews of every team that matters, power ratings, proven betting systems, best bets from all the top analysts here at VSiN. Plus, you also get everything we do over at VSiN.com. That's daily best bets from every show, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, matchup analysis, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. You can start today for just $9.09 with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/. This is Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, back in the saddle for another week. We've got preseason football, and already lines are on the move there. We'll touch on that during the program as well. I'm going to get this in. You can't always rely on hitting 4-1s, okay? And by the way, I should update you at Coors Field. It's an 8-run game, and there's one out in the ninth. Dodgers up 11-3. Rockies have the bases loaded. Edwin Diaz in a low-leverage spot still stinks. Man, David Stearns is going to do a lot of bragging in the offseason about not bringing him back, not bringing Nimmo back, not bringing a couple guys back. But he still is going to get in trouble for Freddie Peralta and letting Pete Alonso walk. I digress. 4-1 on the White Sox right now. They go to Hagen Smith in the bullpen. I don't know if I feel good about that. Plus 380 is what I'm seeing out here. For funsies, I need a little night sweat, aside from when I tie my shoe during the break. So plus 380 on the Chicago White Sox right now. Kyler Murray is a Minnesota Viking. How does he fit into what Kevin O'Connell wants to do? And can the Vikings make the playoffs? We'll discuss it next on Cashing Out.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A little drama to send you into a Monday night, Tuesday morning. Welcome back into the program. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the sports betting network. While we were away, PCA Pete Crow Armstrong just walked it off. A two-run shot to give the Cubbies the win over the White Sox 7-5. Battle of Chicago on. Cubs take the first game. Look, I'm caught up in the moment. I'm lost in the sauce. I had nothing on PCA to be your MVP. I just bet plus 110 after that game. On the same night where the Dodgers did beat the Rockies, I should note 11-5, and Ohtani had four hits and had two home runs. I'm still siding with PCA here. The defense, the miraculous moments, the need for him to elevate his game like this. I just think there's a lot of conversation back and forth. There's good people on both sides of this debate, but I'm going to land on the PCA side at least for now. And our next guest loves it. I mean, he's a football guy, but he's a Chicago guy right now, living there in Chicago. He's Alex Rollins. He has the best film page on YouTube. Alex Rollins NFL is where you can find him, at Alex Rollins NFL on X as well. And he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Before I get your thoughts on football, what's the city like right now? The Cubs and White Sox are both playoff teams, and you got a potential MVP in PCA.
Man, the city's going to burn down if both these teams in the World Series, and we get a cross city World Series going. Oh my God, Wrigley! I feel like I can hear Wrigley right now. It's unbelievable when the Cubs and or White Sox are doing great.
I love that. It's such a vibe right now. And PCA, he owns the city. I guess it's him and Caleb Williams own the city together. Let's transition now to the NFL, where you've got some really good videos up on the website on your YouTube right now. And I want to ask you about Tua Tagovailoa, because I am fighting with a lot of people in this space about him being a starting quarterback of a team that people think can win that NFC South. I don't see it, Alex. What does Tua have left in the tank? And do you think Stefanski can scheme around whatever that is right now and turn them into a winning team?
Yeah, I've been a Tua doubter for a long time. I think Mike McDaniel does get a lot of hype, and rightfully so. He came in and created a style of offense we've never seen. I mean, we saw new motions coming into that offense that now have permeated throughout the league. Tua was on his last legs as a quarterback, and Mike McDaniel came in, reinvented basically offensive football, these quick passes to Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. I think Tua is not capable of running a quote-unquote real NFL offense, a normal NFL offense. And with the Falcons, there's been a lot of issues there for a long time now. I don't see it happening with Tua. I think it's going to be a lot of Michael Penix this year.
Yeah, I think that's their only chance if they're going to be competitive this season. How about the Kyler Murray situation going to Minnesota? Because, you know, on first glance, I thought, I'm intrigued by this. $1.3 million, Kevin O'Connell's done more with less talented quarterbacks in the past. They still have that defense. But then I heard you last week on VSiN Live with Patrick Maher on Mad Dog Sports Radio. You made some really compelling cases about concerns for Kyler. What are they this year for the new Vikings quarterback?
Yeah, we've just over the years seen Kyler slowly take pieces of really what it is to be a quarterback out of his own game. And most recently is he's not willing to get hit. So there was some very fascinating stats that I found. While he is kept clean in the pocket, that means he is not pressured. He had the lowest yards per attempt in the league. It was 38th overall. His average at the target was 5.5, which was incredibly low. These numbers say that Kyler is trying to check the ball down very, very quickly. He's not getting through his progressions. We've really not seen him be an incredible quarterback, only really a dual threat. Now he's not running as much. Once again, as I just said, he's not really willing to get hit. I don't think we're getting – he's always been a lot of flash. And I just don't know if the Vikings are quite getting what Kyler Murray is supposed to be in some people's eyes. I would bet the under on 8.5 over there. I don't really feel a lot of confidence in him.
Yeah, and I saw you had a chart about where he throws the football, the middle of the field. That is concerning, and it's not a joke. He's slight in terms of height. He can't really see over the middle. How sustainable can an offense be if the defense knows you're just working the sides?
Yeah, and really, the only time we've seen him really excel as a quarterback was when he had basically peaked DeAndre Hopkins, and I believe in 2020. And what they would do, they had Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator. They would put DeAndre Hopkins out by himself and just have him destroy people in one-on-one. And Kyler's either throwing a fade ball, a hitch, or a back shoulder fade. And they just ate like that. And then we got to the playoffs. The Rams destroyed them. And then we saw Kyler and the Cardinals kind of fizzle over a couple of years. And the NFL is largely transitioning away from this shotgun style of offense. Kyler needs to be in shotgun because he can't see over the offensive line. So if you put him under center, which is what a lot of teams are doing this year, last year, the year's coming, that's kind of where the league is going. He can't see over the offensive line. So it'll be an interesting pairing in Minnesota, because that is a lot of what Kevin O'Connell wants to do in Minnesota.
Alex Rollins is our guest, NFL film analyst. Check him out on YouTube and on X. Alex Rollins NFL is where all the information is. You know, last year was a tough year for the Philadelphia Eagles. They make a change at offensive coordinator. Sean Mannion comes in. Jalen Hurts is a dilemma, right? He's difficult to scheme up, but we've seen if you scheme him up right, you can get all the way to the Super Bowl and even win one. What's your expectations this year? The win total's 10.5. They're 16-1 to win the Super Bowl. What do you make of this move of Mannion to take over this offense with Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit similar to the Kyler situation. It's a bit of a square peg in a round hole. I think we're seeing Jalen Hurts on more or less his last legs in Philadelphia. I still think they're going to be fine. I am taking the under. When you have an elite talent like A.J. Brown and you can't figure out how to get him to have a lot of success, like they have had some success in the past, but when he is still one of the premier wide receiver talents in this league, when that's starting not to work, that's when I start to get concerned. People say, oh, is it the offense? Is it A.J. Brown? No, it's Jalen Hurts. We can't get A.J. Brown the frickin' football. One thing that's very interesting, too, is he started to run a lot less. He's averaged 40 yards per game rushing. Last year, he only averaged 26. And he's kind of like Kyler. He's only really going to throw fade balls outside. He does have a beautiful go ball, but teams kind of started to scheme A.J. Brown out of that. And he's really just a scrambler and a QB design run guy besides the go balls. So I think, especially without A.J. Brown, I think we're going to see defenses really condense towards the line. You can't run QB run out of under center, which is a lot of what Sean Mannion wants to do. You have to be in shotgun so you can read the defensive line. And so once again, it's a bit of a square peg in a round hole. I don't think we're going to see this progression of Jalen Hurts. I think we're going to realize that he's not capable of running a typical offense in the way that you'd want out of a franchise quarterback. And I'd be worried about the Eagles offense for sure.
Alex Rollins is our guest at Alex Rollins NFL, both YouTube and Twitter X. I suggest everyone checking it out. There's a big talking point where there's people going back and forth about the Chicago Bears. 11 wins a year ago, a lot of that miracle comebacks in the fourth quarter. I'm on the side where I'm pro Bears this year. I just think another year of Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams together, I don't see how they take a step back. I know the schedule is difficult. When you see what they did a season ago to get to the playoffs and make the run that they did, how sustainable do you think that is year two of Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams together?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hype and a lot of it's warranted. I am a bit worried about the defense. There's going to be a lot of regression there. If you look at some of their turnover numbers, those are not going to be sustainable year to year. And so we're going to see the defense on the field a bit more, and it's just not one of the better units in the league, that's for sure. In terms of Caleb, I think the hype is, once again, as I said, warranted, but also getting a little bit out of hand. I do worry. I don't believe in the Madden curse, but I think giving him that level of exposure, we're almost saying, okay, you're the face of the league in a way just because you were on the cover of that game. I think we had some unbelievable throws in the playoffs. But if you look at those games, while he was making some really nice plays, I think his issue is the down-in, down-out consistency, and that's something where he really needs to take a big step. A lot of football, 40% is played 1 yard, 1 through 10 yards down the field. These are quick throws. Caleb is all about getting out of the pocket, ripping off balls on the run, and that's what we know him for, and he's incredible in that one area. But you can't base your game off of that. So I do think we're going to see a really nice step from him. I am a bit worried that it's not going to be this gigantic leap where he's a slam dunk for MVP. I like the Bears, but I would worry about their defense a bit. I think Caleb will take that step, but I think we need to temper expectations a little bit. Sorry, Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. Alex Rollins does an awesome job. Check him out on YouTube at Alex Rollins NFL, on X as well, under the same handle. We'll be chatting all season long. He does an amazing job, and I love the insight. Thanks for the time tonight, buddy. We'll chat soon.
Thank you, Dustin. Thank you so much.
Awesome stuff from Alex there. And yeah, maybe talking me off of the Bears, where I'm a little too zealous on that team right now. Hey, most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea: match betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers to capture value, whether or not your side actually covers. And Ungambled backs it all up. If you don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with the free guide at ungambled.com/VSIN. That's ungambled.com/VSIN. Use promo code VSIN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square. It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. And when we return, rookie of the year in the NFL, injury news impacting offense, and a coach hypes up his player for defense. Can this position actually secure the award? More on that on the other side of Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yeah, buddy, back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You are 15 minutes away from college football talk. Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 previews will be on the program. 45 minutes from this moment, Jeff Erickson on Major League Baseball, where we had a drama-filled Monday night. MVP race? This baby might be coming down to the wire here, people. In case you missed it, Dodgers beat the Rockies at Coors Field 11-5. Shohei Ohtani, 4-for-5, 2 homers, 3 ribbies, 4 runs scored in the contest for the Dodgers. Then at Wrigley Field, the Chicago Cubs in extras. Walk-off home run off the bat of Pete Crow Armstrong. Two home runs for him tonight as he goes 4 for 5, 2 runs, 3 ribbies. And this market's been fluctuating since this has gone down. I got PCA as I saw the ball leave the building at plus 110. I went back for a little bit, plus 105. I have nothing in this market up until right now. This is the first time I've done the little dance into this debate. But the reality is for me, and I think Shohei Ohtani is Hall of Famer. Shohei Ohtani is going to go down as maybe the greatest baseball player we've ever seen with our eyeballs. But I think PCA has a very good chance of winning this thing. So as long as I can get a plus price on him, I'm going to take it. And if I want, I can come back the other way, take a little plus price on Shohei Ohtani if that thing dips up. Right now, though, they don't want to give you that. Right now, it's pick 'em. Minus 110 each way. So you got to ask yourself, which side of the debate are you on? Ohtani doesn't play defense. That matters to me, especially when you look at the Cubs this year. So much of what they're doing is predicated on great defense up the middle. Dansby Swanson at short, Nico Hoerner at second, but it's all brought together in center field by Pete Crow Armstrong. That matters to me. Also, PCA, he's officially a 30-30 man. We still have enough time. It's not crazy. What, a month and a half to go? About 40 games left? Could he be a 40-40 man? If he joins the 40-40 club, we have to think about where he falls in line to win this award, because that's a little bit of history there. It's a very select club. Base running, stealing bases has not been something Ohtani's doing this year, just 7 on the year, dealing with that knee injury. I think that needs to factor in as well. The chaos that PCA is creating on the base paths, that's another wrinkle that he should get credit for. But it's more about the moments tonight. Where the Chicago Cubs without PCA, are they a playoff team? Maybe. But this is a team that can win the World Series. This is a team that, with his ability to show up in these big moments pretty consistently, I'm going to buy into that narrative. It's not the sharpest angle when it comes to betting to say, I love this narrative element for this guy and his angle. But I do think the voters are going to care about that. And there is always that one element of Ohtani fatigue. So with that, put me on the board, plus 110, plus 105 on PCA. If there's plus prices out there, I'll take it. And we'll see how this thing shakes out when it's all said and done. With that, it's now time to tackle the top stories in the National Football League. It's the three-point stance.
The top stories in football.
We want some more! We want some more! We want some more!
Every single day.
Ice up, son! Ice up!
This is three-point stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
We begin in Indianapolis, where moments before the show started about an hour ago, they made an addition signing wide receiver Keenan Allen, which is very concerning because that means they don't believe that Alec Pierce will be ready for week one. You also have Josh Downs dealing with an injury for their receiving core. And this is a group that lost Michael Pittman in the offseason, traded A.D. Mitchell a year ago. This is a tough look for a squad that people were hoping could bounce back. That is if Daniel Jones returns to form from a season ago. Last year, Jones ends the season with an Achilles injury. With him in the lineup, they went out to an 8-2 start. Went 8-5 with Jones as the starter. 0-4 down the stretch were the Colts. Jones went on the Pat McAfee show earlier today and gave this update of where he stands.
I feel really good. I'd say maybe there's a little bit of progress still to be made. I think just kind of like the overall conditioning of it and building up your kind of workload on it. And, you know, through the course of a training camp, I'll continue to feel better. But like I said, I don't have any limitations. I feel quick. I feel like I can get out of the pocket. I can move around in the pocket well and all that stuff. So I think there's still, you know, there's a process to it, but I feel really good.
Yeah, Jones didn't run as much as you think last year, but the element of him being able to run certainly was a base of their offense, which kept teams honest defensively and allowed Jonathan Taylor to go off. 3,100 pass yards, 68% completion rate, 24 total touchdowns, did run it more in the red zone, 8 interceptions. But I'm concerned about this team because if they're so reliant on this defense, and I like the secondary with Bynum and Sauce Gardner on either side of corner, but I don't know how good the pass rush is. You need Latu to be good. Really good, take another step. I don't think this defense can carry them against a schedule that opens up pretty difficult to start with the first three games. And there's a world where Daniel Jones doesn't play and it's Anthony Richardson or Riley Leonard somehow. I mean, you're looking at Baltimore week 1 at home, at Kansas City, then versus Houston. you're lucky if you're 1-2, but there's a world where you're 0-3. And as the schedule shakes out and it goes on, I just don't know if the Colts are going to win 7 games. I mean, 7 feels like where they top out at. Win total 7.5. If anything, I would lay that juice at -150 on the under right now with Indianapolis. We've got news impacting the Offensive Rookie of the Year Award. In case you missed it earlier today, from New Orleans, Saints rookie Jordan Tyson, been awesome in camp, but he's going to be out roughly 2 months. Hamstring injury for him, that per Mike Garofalo. And it's been hamstring issues the last 3 years for Tyson at Arizona State, going back a couple stops. 2025, he also had an ankle sprain. He fractured his collarbone in 24. In 2022, he tore his ACL, MCL, and PCL. This guy just can't stay on the field. It's unfortunate. He's twitchy. He's electric. He makes a ton of plays. But, man, I can't do anything with him right now because I can't trust him. And that's a big part of the Saints offense that everyone's ready to just crown as the best bet in the NFC South. I'm not there, people. A lot of pressure on Chris Olave to step up, and I don't love the receiving core after that. Remember, Rashid Shaheed, he's in Seattle. He was traded during the season a year ago on their way to a Super Bowl. So right now, you can't do anything Jordan Tyson, Offensive Rookie of the Year. He will not be in the mix for that one. And then some other news for Offensive Rookie of the Year, another injury from over the weekend. Jeremiah Love, it's a high ankle sprain. That's according to Adam Schefter. Mike LaFleur won't tell us that. He said it's an ankle. We'll keep it at that. But also reports coming out from Josh Weinfuss, ESPN's beat writer covering Arizona, quote, "I can see them using him more as a feature back, so not the every down guy," which means a lot of Tyler Algier, which then leads to the question, what are you doing drafting a running back in the top 5 if you're not going to use him this upcoming season? Somehow Love is +375 to be your Offensive Rookie of the Year. I can't sniff that. I won't touch him. I won't touch Fernando Mendoza, the second shot. There are options in this market that are worth looking at, and news out of Denver is leading me to one that I think makes a lot of sense here. Sean Payton on why he pulled running back Jonah Coleman early in week 1 of the preseason, quote, "I didn't need to see additional evidence of what I've been seeing for 3 weeks." Sounds like Sean Payton likes that piece he added at running back in Jonah Coleman. And you factor in that this guy's moved already from 60-1. I'm seeing 40-1, 55-1 over at DraftKings. He was very productive at Washington for 2 years, had one really solid year at Arizona. But think about who he's going up against. J.K. Dobbins is getting older, coming off an injury plague season. R.J. Harvey is not ready for every down touches. I think there's a situation where Jonah Coleman steals this job week 3, week 4, becomes that go-to guy on early downs, and they just ride him here. 55-1. That is something that I have to consider right now on one Jonah Coleman. And then finally, we will go to Defensive Rookie of the Year. We will skip the sound. I'll play it a little bit later on in the show. Brian Schottenheimer went on Up and Adams with Kay and Adams. And said about Caleb Downs, his new safety from Ohio State, he does not repeat mistakes. He loves the mentality of the player, which got me thinking, can Caleb Downs be your Defensive Rookie of the Year? Reuben Bain is the current favorite at +475. David Bailey is 5-1. Sonny Styles and Downs are both 7.5-1. Then you have Arvell Reese, 8-1. Mansoor Delane at 9.5-1. I went back and looked, and just based on the history of this award, safeties don't win. Now, he's unique. He's going to play a lot of nickel. He's probably going to line up in man a ton and lock down tight ends and slot receivers. But I don't know if the voter is going to notice that as much, because you go back and look in history. Going back to 2016, it's linebackers, it's edge rushers, and it's a couple corners. And most of the linebackers are outside linebackers who get after quarterbacks and rush the passer. Eight of the 10 were top 10 picks. 6 of the 10 were top 12. 5 of the 10 in the top 4. Darius Leonard, Carson Schwechinger last year, second rounders, they're the outliers. So, unfortunately, for as much as I love Caleb Downs, I don't think you can bet him to win this award, just because the last time a safety won this award was 1990. I believe it was Mark Carrier. Yeah, 1990, Mark Carrier. 8 of the last 10 front 7 players, 2 DBs won it. They were both corners. That is, of course, Sauce Gardner back in 2022, Marshawn Lattimore in 2017. If I'm going to bet this market right now, I think Jacob Rodriguez at 16-1, 15-1 range, the Miami Dolphins linebacker, he's going to be a tackling machine on a bad defense. Guy's going to be running all over them late in games. He's going to rack up numbers that I think people are going to go, wow, double-digit tackles for the rookie. That's someone that I think is worth looking at a little bit deeper down the board than just going 7.5-1 on Caleb Downs, when there isn't a track record for that position winning Defensive Rookie of the Year.